Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That first hour was so much tension there. That you just please get off to a good start. Let's not have an absolute nightmare here.
You're listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. These are the stories from the home of cricket, with the people that made them. Well, welcome to this episode of the Lord's Cricket Podcast. I'm joined today by a true legend of South African cricket, a man who took 330 test wickets in 72 matches. Alan Donald, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Busy. It's back into the English county grind. Yeah, it's nice to be here for the first time at Kent.
Great stuff. We're going to go down memory lane today, Alan. So, I mean, the first question I've got for you is the zinc and the war paint. What was all that about?
Well, I saw Craig McDermott wear it once, but I also, when I was at school, I was sort of mucking around with it a little bit and put it on. And then some kid said to me, you know, he's just a poser, you know, sort of, you know, there's no need for that. But I genuinely, because my mom always said that, you know, you got to protect yourself. It's very important that you look after your skin.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I got this stuff and I started putting it on my nose. And that's how it all kicked off. And it sort of became part of me.
Did you do it to intimidate batsmen?
No, it wasn't really. I genuinely did it because I thought, well, you know, that's probably me. You've created this identity, and also it just sort of kicked on from there. And until a doctor in Australia actually told me that it wasn't really good for you, because of the zinc, it sort of reflects back into your eyes, so it causes more damage. And ultimately, I've had a pterygium removed, which was not a pleasant operation to do, and a lot of the youngsters now, you can all see them wear glasses. It's so important. The sun is brutal out there, not only on your skin but in your eyes. So I quickly just that was it. I stopped using it and then sort of did it on my lips.
White Lightning, that was the nickname. Who coined that, by the way?
Well, it was in Australia. 93-94 series, where I opened the papers and at breakfast one morning and I saw White Lightning, and the headlines was White Lightning. I don't know what they wrote about, but it was just White Lightning, South Africa's White Lightning, and that's it. That's where it started. So
so a journo coined it.
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask about how you got into fast bowling. I mean, being a South African, I presume growing up, rugby and cricket were the two main sports you played?
Well, yeah, we had to play a winter sport. And obviously, if you're a young kid in South Africa, you want to play for the Springboks. So I loved rugby. It was my number one sport. Mm. And I started playing cricket. I quite enjoyed cricket. I started off as a young leg spinner, and by absolute pure coincidence, I rocked up at a training one day, and one of our quick bowlers was ill, and he was out for the week. So we were playing 2 days later, and a coach asked me, "Can you bowl some seam up?" I said, "I'll try." Wow, he was quite impressed, and so was I. I was bowling massive Mike Proctor in swingers, but he was quite happy with that. And that was me. I never looked back after that. Every Friday, I used to go and stay at my granddad's, my granny and granddad's house, because mom and dad worked on weekends. So my granddad took me into whatever I was doing, either rugby or it was cricket, so he can drop me off. And I was reading the Cricketer and Wisden magazines. I always, it just like stacks of them that was there. And I always dreamt about, I want to play cricket over there. I really want to play cricket in England. I would give everything to have a crack at it.
And have a crack at it he did. Alan Donald goes on to become a cult hero at Warwickshire and entertains crowds all over the United Kingdom as a touring South African. But first, Alan's childhood. Born in 1966 in Bloemfontein, a city in the Free State, a rural part of South Africa where Afrikaans is the main language, Alan's the eldest of three kids. So how was it growing up?
It's a perfect place if you're a child because there's no distractions. It's got fantastic schools, and it's always known for its very, very good schools. Of course, I grew up in an era of when it was total apartheid. You know, me as a kid growing up in that era, I sensed that from my point of view that things were happening, the things that were happening in my country was totally wrong. And I just couldn't understand why should a black man not walk into a white man's toilet, public toilet. I couldn't get that, you know. So I was really, it bugged me. It really did bug me when I was a child because it was wrong. That sort of thing was wrong for me. But look, we got through those periods and South Africa just got better and better for this, you know, it just really got better. But the problem is, you know, we South Africa is a sports mad country and we wanted to represent our country and we knew that in being in isolation wasn't going to cut it. So being in Bloemfontein was a great thing for me because we still were playing first class cricket. We had a strong rugby and cricket culture in Bloemfontein, but also, you know, because of the smallness of the place, I think there's only about not even 800,000 then in Bloemfontein. So we had access to a lot of good coaches that's never been heard of before, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, look, I love being there, and my parents were. I come from a strict upbringing. My mum and dad were very strict with us, and then, you know, I wouldn't say I was fortunate enough to have done national service. So we were straight from school into the army. That was tough. That was intimidating for an 18-year-old kid to be thrown in there, knowing that there's no other option, or there was. You could either go and study, or you could go to the army, and I didn't see myself studying, so I went the other way and got 2 years of national service out of the way, which was very good for me.
Did you keep up your cricket at the same time? How did you balance the two?
Yeah, I was, you know, Ansie Cronier's dad, Evi Cronier, was the CEO of Free State Cricket, so he made sure I stayed in Bloemfontein. So, you know, we all talked about it at school. When you get that envelope, that brown envelope, in your last days of school, it tells you exactly in there where would you go to the army. So it could be Cape Town, Pretoria, Joburg. It could be far, far away. So I was
It's a big country, isn't it, South Africa? Yeah.
So because we were so sort of housebound and you know, you become so, you know, set in your ways. You've never been taken out of your comfort zone. And all of a sudden that comes along, that really just puts another perspective on life. I often say it for my son's sake, I wish it was still there so I can send him there.
Make him go through the same pain that you did. Alan excels at cricket, in particular fast bowling. After doing his time in the army, he makes his debut for the Free State and soon finds himself on a plane to England.
Yeah, I made my debut in '85 at the Wanderers against Transvaal, and that was Graham Pollock's last season. And Chris Broad was our captain, and I wasn't going to play. I was 12th man, and Corey Fonseca had a stress fracture in his foot, and he said to me, "You're in. You're playing." You know, and from that day, you know, it's, I was lucky enough just to keep going and playing. And in 1986-7, the Rebel Australians came to South Africa and played the last unofficial test. That was also Graham Pollock's last at St. George's Park, where he made 150-odd. David Brown was there, Warwickshire's head coach. And he was at that game because he often comes to South Africa to look for young cricketers to go on an exchange to Warwickshire, which they did frequently with a lot of South African players. And he asked me whether I was keen. He came to me one evening and after a day's play and said, would I be keen? And I was just over the moon.
Getting off that plane as a 20-year-old, I presume you flew into Heathrow and were picked up then. You must have been quite, I don't want to use the word scared, but nervous, anticipation. I mean, this is a slightly different era. There's no WhatsApp to say you've landed. You just get picked up in a car.
Yeah, Andy Moles picked me up and drove me from Heathrow to Birmingham and drove into Birmingham, which was a... I don't want to mean too bad. I thought, wow, this is a bit of a rough spot.
A bit overcast.
A bit cold. I wasn't nervous. I was very excited. I was really excited to be there and just couldn't wait to get stuck in. And I could genuinely not speak a word of English. So broken English, I could understand it, but I really struggled to speak it because now I was... And I was generally quite a shy guy anyway. And having to be in that dressing room and, you know, arriving the first day, walked in at Edgbaston and there was Dennis Amos, Alvin Kalacharan, Jeff Humpage, just to name those couple. I mean, there was a, you know, these are the guys I've been paging through the Cricketer and the Wisden magazine all my life. And Alvin Kalacharan actually played a lot of his cricket in Free State. You know, he came over and was an overseas professional, so he I was pretty used to him. But yeah, just so good to be at the club. And you know, his pre-season was a little bit different than I experienced, and it was so cold. And you know, running in the park across the Cannon Hill Park, going for runs in there was a bit of an experience with shorts on.
Is it true that you bounced Dennis Amos in the nets early doors and he wasn't too pleased with you?
Yes, he actually walked out the net and I was trying so hard to impress, and the indoor centre was just rapid. It was just so quick. And he just walked out and he literally told me that, you know, this you'll find, I know you'll still find your length in here, but you're not going to break my hand or anything else for that matter. So he just kindly just had some hits in the other net. I just got carried away with it a little bit and just trying to make a statement earlier on. So that's very true.
And you mentioned just now that obviously you didn't really speak much English. You're an Afrikaner. That was the language you spoke. There's a lovely story I heard that you weren't sure of the difference between the word compulsory and optional.
So it was a bit confusing for me back in those days.
So optional nets, you were raring to go.
I thought every practice was a must come to, and quickly figure that out. But hold on a second, if you had optional training, that's giving you the option to go and have a rest as well. So but I was so I was just so hungry for success and so hungry to make an impact.
His first season at Warwickshire, Alan's like a sponge, sucking up as much wisdom as he can. He chats to whoever, whenever and wherever. Gordon Greenwich, Desmond Haynes, Clive Rice, Michael Holding, Ian Botham, Martin Crowe are just some of the names on the county circuit. But two stand out for a young, quick bowler. First up, Sir Richard Hadley.
Hadley was amazing, absolutely unbelievable bowler. Watched his videos. I still make notes now about how he thinks about the game, and especially the strategy of Test cricket and how he sees his world and how he works people over. That to me is still fascinating, you know. So I faced two full overs of him. I didn't lay a bat on it. I think the the last two balls, I think the second last ball of the second over, he bowled me and nicked me off. That was the first time I actually laid bat on it. And just his, just how he used the crease to me was, you know, you see it so clearly what's happening in front of you. And Malcolm Marshall, Hampshire, played at Edgbaston, where he took 14 wickets, and he just, on a flat wicket, that just bowled with his head and was so good. I actually went and sat at Edgbaston by the old scoreboard, underneath the old scoreboard there, and I just watched him, because we played on the far side near the Raybank stand, and just watched him for a whole session, how he just weaved his magic. You know, he wasn't that quick anymore, but still not slow, but he just was so skillful, and I just wanted to learn so much from those guys. And eventually I spent a session and a half at Hampshire with Malcolm Marshall, and he again just story after story of where he started and who he played with. And wow, I mean, that was just that was such fun.
You were sort of awestruck by these characters, especially Malcolm Marshall.
Yeah.
It wasn't too long before those success came your way. Warwickshire, during that period, had a lot of success. I want to talk about the 1989 NatWest Trophy final at Lords. Was that your first Lords final?
Yeah. First Lords final. I didn't think I would play it. You know, I was also might have been Tony or myself and Andy had a gut feel that, you know, I was the guy to play on that day. And my first rollout at the Great Ground was, and again, I was like a kid in a candy store, really. You know, I've heard so much about Lords and the just the atmosphere and just coming down those stairs. That's all true. It is just absolutely amazing. And it was a 60 overs. Thank goodness that's not anymore, but 60 overs is a long day. And we won that just about at the death when it was very dark. You know, Neil Smith hitting the last ball. I think it must have been near enough the last couple of overs or so. Hit it for six,
yeah,
to win the game.
I've got the scorecard here. It was Smith and Asif Din with the two not out batsmen. I don't criticise Alan, but 60 overs, Middlesex batted first and posted 210 for five. The game's changed slightly.
The one day game now, that you can never compare the one day game now and comparing to that, because the skill level has just gone through the roof, and the way that people approach one day cricket now is scary. You know, bigger bats, bigger people, they hit the ball further, and it's just aggression from ball one. So to see those scores is unbelievable. That would have been knocked down in about less than 30 overs, I reckon.
Indeed. You picked up Mark Ramprakash, bowled Donald for 24. That was, I think, your return figures of 1 for 41. There you go. First Lord's final. Nice memories.
Yeah, I was happy with that. I was even more happier when that ball was in the stands and Neil Smith. The game was never going to end.
Mm.
It just was so slow, and every run that was so hard to come by. And but yeah, those were the cautious days of one day cricket, but thankfully no more.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So Alan's first big game at Lord's and a win. In 1994, aged 27, Alan and his South Africa teammates come to England, back on the sporting scene, following years in isolation during apartheid. The first test of the summer is at Lord's.
The excitement was off the charts because, England for us was the team to beat. That's almost our ashes, if you can put it in that way. Because you come to England here, you set your standards high, and Kepler Wessels, being captain, made that very, very clear right from the word go that the attitude and the aggression we bring to the table is going to be very, very, very crucial to winning that series. And Kepler was, I would have thought he was probably also getting to the end of steadily getting to the end of his career as well, so he wanted that win badly. It was a big series for him. He felt he had a lot to prove personally, but also he wanted to be that captain that goes home and say we've beaten England in England.
And that Lord's Test match, the first morning, you guys walk out. You bat first. You hit 357, and Kepler hits a century. What were the nerves like in the dressing room? I saw an interview with Dave Richardson, now ICC and former wicketkeeper. He says you were a nervous bunch actually that morning test.
We were not nervous. We were terrified actually, because walking through those doors and just the reception those two guys got. Hudson and Gary Kirsten walking through that little, I stood down the stairs there actually and just wanted to have a look at this, how this unfolds when you walk through there. And when they reached the pitch, it was every single person in that stadium stood up. It was one heck of a thing. I'll never forget it. It got better when the whole team walked out finally to go and bowl for the first time. But my word, yeah. I mean, there was that first hour was so much tension there. Just please get off to a good start. Let's not have an absolute nightmare here. Although no one said so, I just felt that almost all my teammates were thinking the same thing. Just do not mess this up today. But thankfully, Kepler's 100 was a fantastic 100, and obviously John T. Rhodes, McMillan made a great contribution. We had a fairly long tail as well. So all rounders, Matthews, well, de Villiers and myself were the only bowlers there really, and Matthews of course. But to get 357 and then go and bowl England out the way we did was a serious effort.
Off in again from the pavilion end, bowls with a wide sweep of the arm. This is hit off the back foot between the two slips and the gullies for four to third man. It wasn't absolutely a convincing stroke, but it was a fair one in the circumstances. Had there been a third or fourth slip, he might have been interested in that. It got up, but he in turn rode the hands high and managed to keep control of the stroke. On a very quick wicket, that might have perhaps ended up in slips' hands, but as it was, it ended up on the third man boundary. 5 to Cronje, 33 for 1 on this lovely summer's morning.
Just being on the field finally as a cricket team, collectively on that field, was a special feeling. It really was.
And when you did bowl England out for 180, you did what every cricketer dreams of. You got your name on those Lord's Honours boards. Talk me through that Alan Donald 5 for 74.
Yeah, it was a very, very special. And I think that That's what you look at as a player. You look at all those the honours boards there, the batting and the bowling, and you look at the names who's been there before, and you think, wow. I mean, I would absolutely want to be part of that. And how are you going to do this? And quickly, you know, Kepler, I think Mike Proctor actually just said that. Forget about what's on that board here. You know, if it comes, it comes. It's a bonus, and you'll be remembered forever getting your name on there. That's one motivation. And you know, but I think we bowled like we could as a South African team, and I was just lucky enough to come out the other end with a 5-wicket haul.
Oh, got him! Didn't bounce. Stewart on the back foot and gone off almost the face of the bat rather than the inside edge. And Donald has done it. 19 for one. Got in. Donald has struck. Atherton goes just before the interval. Well, extra pace, no doubt about that. Well, there he goes. It was very important that he should survive for England, but Donald has got through. And as I just mentioned, don't put your life savings on the saving of the follow-on.
Quite right too, Richie, and it's been a very difficult innings for Craig White. I think one of the most difficult innings of his career.
And he's gone now. Donald has got him. The follow-on has been saved. De Freitas is out for 20, and a very brisk 20. They've only just had time to sit down in the commentary box, and it's all been happening. De Freitas out for 20. A good, sharp catch there. And Donald has claimed his wicket. 161 for 8 now, England.
You don't need motivating playing there. It just comes naturally. It's that special. The place is just throws out history at you, and you want to be part of that history. And I think that just drives a cricket team, especially a touring cricket team. That just is the motivation that you need to is to try and get your name on that honors board. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to do it twice. Once in 94 and once in 98, so it was a good effort.
Got it. Goff is gone. That's good reflexes from Donald. We've got a fast bowler coming in, bowling around about 90 to 100 miles an hour, and he's still able to make a slight change in direction, dive and take a splendid catch. Darren Goff out for 12, 176 for 9, and Donald has struck again. 5 wickets in the innings.
When that came back to you, you must have known, just don't drop it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I must say, it wasn't like he bludgeoned it back at me. It was sort of a mistimed leg side chip or something like that, and it came back to me nice and easy. So it was, yeah, what a feeling, you know, when you just think, wow, is that such a relief? You think that's it, the first South African since the apartheid era to get your name on the honours board. It's a 5-wicket haul, so that was incredibly satisfying, and incredibly I reckon also a bit of emotion, and that's where I had a think back to all those guys who didn't make it there. You know, immediately think, you know, we've had some great bowlers over the years, you know, Mike Proctor himself, who's our coach, Peter Pollock, who was also tremendous. He became a selector, South African selector, great human being. All the other guys, Vince van der Bijl and these guys who were Clive Rice, Hugh Page, and all these guys who never really had the chance to play for their country. But you know, it is what it is, and but yeah, I'm very privileged to have you know, put my name up there.
You go on to win the Test match. You get 278 for 8 declared in your second innings, and then England are all out for 99. I think Brian McMillan takes that final wicket as Gus Fraser is trapped LBW, and then it's Q celebrations. The home of cricket, you've returned.
Yeah, We were back, and I think we did celebrate really well. I still remember having the flag up there, and we were told off for during the test match for please take the flag down on the balcony. But we got a very rude awakening at 6 o'clock the next morning because I got a knock on my door from the fitness trainer saying we got to be downstairs now, and I thought, you are kidding me, you know. So, and I thought, well, I'll stroll down there. I wasn't feeling too great, but I mean, we've just won an amazing test match. And Kepler got us together, and he said, his words were, I don't care what you think. I know this will rock a few, but at the moment, we have only won one test match, and we're here to, our mission is not completed. So we're going to go for a little stroll. It was raining as well. And that later that day, we were off to Northampton, and that really sort of just blew me away. It sort of brought back to reality and brought us down to earth, because we which was true, we haven't won anything yet but one test, and there was a lot more work to do. So, but yeah, so it was a nice celebration, but short-lived at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Is it true that Desmond Tutu snuck that flag in on the final day? Or is that...
I can't recall that.
No.
I can't really say to you that was true or not. But I do think that flag was in there since day one. So
just floating around in the dressing room. Then the rest of the tour... Oh, we haven't even mentioned that was a game in which Mike Atherton, dirt in the pocket affair. But
yeah,
We'll focus on South Africa's victory for this episode of the podcast. And you had a bit of a falling out with Kepler during that tour, didn't
you? Yeah, it was... I struggled with a foot, and my right foot was really... You know, I took a... During the second test at Headingley, I took an injection because I could hardly stand on it. And I kept on saying, maybe we should have this scanned or x-rayed. And they said, no, it's okay. You've just got, you know... we didn't know what it was. So I had an injection in there, kept on bowling. There was 10 days before the third test at the Oval. So they told me, get off your feet. Don't do anything. Just stay off your feet. Don't do anything. Okay, fine. Did a fitness test. Passed that fitness test.
As you're hearing, Alan's struggling with an injury. Having won at Lord's, the next match at Headingley's a draw, then to the Oval for the final test of the series. But Devon Malcolm destroys South Africa with a famous 9-wicket haul. Suddenly, from the highs of Lord's, the tour's ending miserably. Alan and Kepler's relationship goes from bad to worse. Let's pick the story up on day two at the Oval.
I came on sort of just after lunch, between lunch and tea, and I got two quick wickets. And I remember I yorked Graham Hick, and a few balls later, I started to feel a lot of cramps. But I was in heavy medication, and you know, no one told me, listen, you need to watch out because you still need to do some exercises to just keep moving. And then my body just went into one spasm. Because of all the stuff I've been taking, and Kepler, obviously he didn't enjoy that very much, because I was in the middle of a really good spell. And I walked back and I said to Hansie Cronier, I said, listen, H, I'm really struggling, I'm going to have to. He said, you can't walk off now, you cannot. I literally could not do anything from my feet to my hands. Everything was just in one. So Kepler got really, you know, he was annoyed, and I can understand why. But if you're not mobile, you're not mobile. And I think that it was a bit of a bitter one, because when Malcolm, you know, we weren't really switched on for that. We always, you know, he told us, and when you see, there's so many great clips of when you see Dev gets hit right in the center of his helmet, and the badge keeps flying off onto the floor. Gary Kirsten wanted to pick it up, and he just said, get away, you guys are in trouble. I didn't take him seriously, because you know, he's going to bowl quick for a short period of time, and I still said that, just be wary, because he's going to come at us. And but he got it so right, it was frightening, because that was the best I've ever seen him bowl. Bowled quick, 90 odd miles, 94 miles an hour plus.
And he goes, on the pavilion end and bowls to...
Oh, he's bowled him! Shatters the stumps. They're all over the place. South Africa in disarray. Devon Malcolm is among them. 1 for 3. Cronier bowled for naught. And the oval erupts. Incredible scenes here. Full length delivery. Cronier late in playing forward. Middle stump knockback. And Devon Malcolm is really climbing in here. As in moves Malcolm to bowl to Donald. Oh, he's bowled him. It's all over. Malcolm has 9 wickets. Donald hit on the pad. The ball rolls back and hits the middle stump. Congratulations all round for Devon Malcolm. An awesome display by Devon Malcolm. They're all around him. Except, of course, for Atherton and Gooch, who made their way up to the dressing room to pad up. As South Africa are 175 all out. A standing ovation. Union Jack away in the stands flies high as Devon Malcolm will lead England off. After a quite superb spell of bowling. Cap in his left hand. He walks off, applauded by his England teammates, waves the cap up in the air. Alan Donald shakes his hand as he walks past him and up into the dressing room.
We were just blown away, and in one session, it was brutal, and you know. So, but I just sense that, you know, me and Kepler after that, we didn't speak much. He was not happy with the way that I left the field. It was out of my control. The whole scenario was not handled very well, I felt. But he was a tough man, and I felt at times he was uncompromising. It was he batted with a lot of broken fingers, so he thought, well, you know, he wanted everyone to be like that, and unfortunately, it wasn't to be like that. But he wanted to win that series so badly. I understand that, and I get that.
Do you think he went maybe a bit too far in that sort of mentality?
The tour went from really having a great tour, a great time, first time back in the UK playing England, to a miserable tour where everyone is, because we had to go to Holland and then we lost there against Holland. Then I didn't play because of my foot. Went back to South Africa. First time I scanned it, I had a crack in my little bone underneath my foot, which was very important. And the doctor told me that he doesn't think the success rate of this operation is not a good one, because for us doing this sort of type of impact sport, impact on your feet and the loads you carry, I can't guarantee you're going to bowl again. So that was the seriousness of the injury, which was basically sort of just flicked on. You know, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, take an injection here and there. But I actually had a really big fracture in my on that bone. So I was out for 6 months. And it took me a long time to get back. But it was a miserable tour, and I was just, you know, I was disappointed how Kepler handled that.
Because he's also from the Free State as well.
Yeah,
he went to great college. Same school.
Went to great college. I think he's got a great cricket brain, seriously good cricket brain, and he was a hard man. That's fine.
Is there a toughness to people from sort of the Free State? I think you once compared it to Yorkshire.
Who's that, Kepler?
You did the Free State and Bloemfontein. You said the people there are like people from Yorkshire.
Well, I just think it's how kids grow up, and they learn to fend for themselves, and it brings out a real steeliness amongst them, and they quickly, you know, right. We didn't have great coaches around, not first class anyway, but. So you grow up having to fend for yourself and harden up. Kepler was from he played his cricket in Australia. He was a bloody good batsman and a very good captain. I really, really enjoyed playing under him. I just felt it was so wrong to have left the tour under that cold circumstances.
Yeah.
But you know, we talk today.
It's good to know. You've been listening to the Lord's Cricket Podcast with me, Will Rowe. The stories from the home of cricket with the people that made them. That was the first part of the Alan Donald story. In the next episode, Alan chats about meeting Nelson Mandela, returning to Lord's for the 1998 test where, guess what, he takes a 5-wicket haul, that famous duel with Mike Atherton, and the match-fixing scandal and tragic death of his close friend Hansie Cronje. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a listen to part two.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.